From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the ongoing war on terrorism have created business opportunities for defense contractors that supply weapons, security systems, and services to rebuild infrastructure. On today's Fresh Air, we examine connections between the Bush administration and the defense industry. Do those ties represent conflicts of interest? We talk with Charles Lewis, founding executive director of the watchdog group, the Center for Public Integrity. We'll also talk with Lieutenant Colonel Gene Pollock, a spokesperson for the Army Corps of Engineers, which awarded Kellogg Brown and Root the contract to repair the oil fields of Iraq. The company is a subsidiary of Halliburton, which was formerly headed by Vice President Dick Cheney. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. U.S. troops in Iraq have arrested more than 400 people suspected of resisting the U.S.-led occupation. The operation has stirred resentment among some Iraqis who say innocent people have been caught in the sweep. Paul Bremer, the top U.S. administrator in Iraq, said U.S. troops try to make it clear that they're only targeting loyalists of the former regime.
When we have these military operations, we try very quickly to show that we are not at war with the Iraqi people. We are trying to deal with the people who are indeed themselves at war with the Iraqi people, these kinds of people who are attacking us in the area west and north of Baghdad.
During the operation, an American soldier was killed by a sniper yesterday in Baghdad. A federal appeals panel says the Justice Department doesn't have to reveal the names of foreigners jailed for national security reasons after September 11th. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports.
By now, most of the 1,200 detainees have been released or deported. Only one has been charged in connection with the 9/11 attack, and 134 have been charged with unrelated crimes. In an effort to see whether the Justice Department abused its power in the detentions, several public interest groups sought to learn the identities of the detainees and their lawyers, plus the dates of their arrests and releases. The Justice Department refused to provide the information. Today, a federal appeals panel sustained that refusal by a vote of 2-1. The majority said the court should not second-guess the executive branch in matters of national security, but the dissent said the majority's uncritical deference to the government's vague justifications eviscerates the Freedom of Information Act and the principles of openness it embodies. An appeal to the Supreme Court is expected. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
The interim head of the group looking into sexual abuse by Catholic priests says the departure of former Oklahoma Governor Frank Keating will not discourage other board members from taking the church to task when necessary. Jason DeRose reports from Chicago Public Radio.
Illinois appellate judge Ann Burke will be the interim head of the Lay Catholic Review Board. The group is charged with implementing surveys and studies of the extent and causes of sexual abuse among Roman Catholic clergy. Burke says there are no shrinking violets on the board, and the church can expect to be held to rigorous standards when turning over information for review.
If a bishop doesn't wish to comply, so be it. But the public will know. The Catholic Church laity will know who they are for not complying, and the bishops will have to answer to them.
Judge Burke expects the review board to launch a long-term inquiry into the causes of sex abuse among clergy by the end of the year. For NPR News, I'm Jason DeRose in Chicago.
In stocks today, the Dow Industrials gained 4 points to close at 9,323 in active trading. This is NPR News. Canada's prime minister says his government will draft a new law permitting same-sex marriages. Jean Chrétien said the law will be drafted within weeks and submitted for a review by the Canadian Supreme Court. The decision comes after recent court rulings that said Canada's definition of marriage is unconstitutional because it specifies the union of a man and a woman rather than simply two people. If the law is passed by Parliament, Canada would join Belgium and the Netherlands as the only countries that permit homosexual marriage. The World Health Organization has lifted its warning against travel to Taiwan because of SARS. The Chinese capital, Beijing, is now the only place where SARS is still seen as a potential threat to visitors. NPR's Rob Gifford reports from Beijing.
The advice against unnecessary travel to Taiwan was issued a month ago as the number of SARS cases surged on the island. In a statement, the WHO said the advice was dropped because the situation has now improved significantly. Taiwan has the world's third highest number of SARS infections, but reported no new cases for the second straight day. Although it has lifted the travel warning, the WHO said that Taiwan must continue to screen travelers leaving the island because SARS has not yet been completely stamped out. Last Friday, the WHO removed mainland China except Beijing from the travel blacklist. It said it was still not convinced the Chinese capital had completely controlled the disease. Rob Gifford, NPR News, Beijing.
In stocks today, the NASDAQ Composite Index gained 2 points to close at 1,668. Corey Flintoff, NPR News in Washington.
The NPR Shop introduces I Heard It on NPR, At Home in the World, a compilation of world music by artists featured on NPR programs at npr.org.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Three wars have been fought during the Bush administration, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and the ongoing war on terrorism. The weapons and security systems required for these wars have led to some lucrative contracts for the defense industry. Questions have been raised by watchdog groups, members of Congress, and journalists about ties between members of the Bush administration and defense contractors. Do these ties represent conflicts of interest? The group, the Center for Public Integrity, has been examining these questions. My guest is the founding executive director, Charles Lewis. The Center for Public Integrity describes itself as a nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization that investigates corruption and abuse of power by governments, corporations, and individuals involved in the political process. I asked Charles Lewis to give us an overview of what he sees as the conflicts of interest surrounding the Bush administration's ties to the defense industry.
One of the things we have looked at is the Defense Policy Board, this group of advisors to Defense Secretary Rumsfeld. We found that 9 of the 30 members of that board were working for connected to companies getting $76 billion in contracts the last 2 years, and we thought that looked a little funny and pointed it out. I'm actually wanting very much to look more closely at what's going on in the reconstruction of Iraq, but actually the documentation is almost non-existent. We want to know who's on the ground. Apparently only 17% of the people on the ground are actually Department of Defense employees, and the rest are private individuals working with companies, and we don't know who they are or which companies are involved. And when journalists have tried to get this information, they've been told it's not available. You know, so the folks that are sort of making money from this and doing it as a business, that dimension of it is thwarted by the public and journalists and folks that want to find that out because the information is not available from the Pentagon in this instance. There's been quite a bit of controversy in recent weeks and months about certain companies getting pretty cushy contracts, a select group of friendly companies with long ties to the Republican Party or the Bush administration. Bechtel is one of those companies. Another one, of course, is Halliburton, the vice president's former company that he was the CEO of. So we have looked at all of those kinds of issues. But what you're really seeing here is we have a defense contractor class which is getting bloated up even larger because of what's happened with September 11th and what's happened in Iraq. And the fact we've had 2 wars in 2 years, and a lot of companies are well-positioned to do contractually, and in other words, in terms of money. And the amount of scrutiny and the amount of discussion about it is not what it ought to be, I think.
Well, let's start with the Defense Policy Board, which Sure. your group has investigated. First of all, describe what it does. It's not a well-known group to the public.
Well, it is, and there are a lot of advisory groups in Washington, and this is one of them. It was created in 1985 to provide back-channel advice to the Secretary of Defense and his top people. And it's comprised of a sort of a who's who of the defense military establishment, essentially. Folks from high positions in the sort of foreign policy and military arenas over the last several, you know, two, three decades, both parties are represented. You have generals, you have admirals, you know, former, these are all formers. But So it's 30 people, and they meet at least four times a year in classified meetings, 2- and 3-day long meetings, and they discuss whatever the Secretary of Defense and his people want to talk about. They have financial disclosure forms about their assets and their financial interests, but no one can see them. It's only available to the Pentagon internally. That's what they do. They advise on munitions programs, new technologies they might be interested in getting involved in. And you know, this is obviously for investors and for the private sector. What goes on in these conversations is of immense interest. And the folks on this board have incredible access and influence because they have the ear of the Secretary of Defense and his top people.
And you found that some of the people sitting on this board actually have ties to defense contractors. What are some of the connections that you found?
Well, I mean, one of my favorites, I say that with a slight smile, Chris Williams was an aide to Donald Rumsfeld as defense secretary, and he left, went out into the private sector, and became a lobbyist. And he went to work for a lobbying firm that was mostly an energy lobbying firm, dealing a former Louisiana senator who was the energy chairman on the Senate, started a lobbying firm called Johnston & Associates. And so he joins that firm, and then he starts, he clearly was hired to help broaden the firm from energy into other areas. Everyone sees there's a bonanza going on here, that if you're dealing in anything with national security, defense or homeland security, the place to be is in and around the Pentagon or this new Department of Homeland Security. This is where the action is and where the money is and, frankly, where the contracts are. And so if you're a lobbying firm and you're already getting energy-type contracts because of your clout and your contacts, but you want to broaden, you hire a guy who used to work for Rumsfeld. It's a tried-and-true method in Washington, the mercenary culture. People go into the private sector. They substantially increase their salaries. They use their Rolodexes and their personal contacts that they've built up over the years to make money, not just for themselves, but for their new bosses, their new companies. And Williams brought in, Boeing TRW and Northrop Grumman into that firm, which had been mostly an energy firm. And at the same time, he's on the Defense Policy Board. And so now, you know, he's making huge sums of money. I don't know how much exactly, but it's got to be well into the six figures, probably triple, quadruple what he was making at the Pentagon as a public servant. And he has access on a regular basis to the Secretary of Defense and his top people and a classified clearance on top of that. So he has the best of all worlds.
So when you say that he brought in these other companies, do you mean he got contracts for them or he represented
them as a
lobbyist?
Right, I'm sorry. He got lobbying contracts for them. Usually they run $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year for him on a monthly retainer, but usually for a year or more. So TRW is hiring Johnston & Associates to do their bidding in Washington to try to grease the skids and make sure that they get access to lawmakers when they need them, both on the Hill and downtown in the executive branch. That's kind of how Washington works in all departments, but especially and including the Defense Department.
What are some of the other connections between members of the Defense Policy Board and the defense industry?
Well, former Secretary of Defense Harold Brown, who served under Jimmy Carter and James Schlesinger, former CIA director under the Carter and Nixon administrations, both have ties to defense contractors. They are on the boards of companies. Brown is on the board of Philip Morris, which actually has defense contracts, which I didn't know before. And he's a trustee of the RAND Corporation, which of course gets lots of contract work. Had $83 million in contracts last year and $146 million the year before. That's the RAND Corporation I'm talking about. Schlesinger is with Lehman Brothers, the big Wall Street firm, and is the chair of the board of the Meter, MITRE, Meter Corporation, a not-for-profit, big defense place that got over $470 million last year in contracts. Some other cases are former CIA director James Woolsey, who's a vice president of Booz Allen Hamilton, which is one of the biggest defense contractors around in Washington. They took in $680 million last year in contracts. You have Jack Sheehan, a retired general who was with Bechtel, Bechtel got $1 billion last year and $650 million in 2001. Sheehan is on that board. And you have, you know, there's a whole number of people here, really. You have Ronald Fogelman, a retired Air Force general, who's on the board of companies that took in $900 million last year. You have retired Admiral David Jeremiah, former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs in the Navy 38 years, who is on a director or advisor to five corporations that have taken in $10 billion in contracts last year. And so, you know, I could go on and on, but these are, and of course, the one that got the most attention is Richard Perle, who was the chair of the Defense Policy Board, who, after articles in the New Yorker and the New York Times and other places, had to step down as chairman, although he still serves on the Defense Policy Board. He did not leave the board. He just left as chair.
What were the conflicts presented to him?
There were several news stories, actually. One was there was a company called Treme that was trying to do business with Homeland Security and defense contracts, and he was meeting with these folks as a private citizen and as an investor, and they were clearly trying to find out what he knew, and he was obviously a big proponent of the war in Iraq and other defense policies, and has the ear of not only Defense Secretary Rumsfeld, but others in the White House itself. And so there was a solicitation where his name was on it, and it mentioned that he was with the Defense Policy Board. So he was making no bones about his ties to the administration, which, and his quasi-public official status on this advisory unpaid board. So the story was that he was trying to make money on the side while he was on the Defense Policy Board. And then other stories came out. He was getting a $750,000 fee for advising Goldman Sachs on how to invest in the Pentagon in weapon systems that might be coming up. He was asked, the Los Angeles Times did a more recent story where they took the minutes of the meetings of the Defense Policy Board where certain things like North Korea and Iraq were discussed, but like, where are we going to go next and what's the next hot spot in the world? And that would be discussed in a classified context. And then he would give a talk and pick up a $500,000 or $750,000 fee to advise investors around the world for Goldman Sachs on defense investment opportunities. And so there has been and continues to be the suspicion that Perle is making money from his position on the Defense Policy Board, which he, of course, vehemently denies. And when the first story came out, he called the reporter a terrorist. So the tempers have been flaring there. But interestingly, no one in the administration asked him to step down from the Defense Policy Board. No one thought that these associations were untoward or embarrassing to the administration. It was something Perle says he did to protect the administration, basically.
So sum up for me what you think the problem is when somebody on the Defense Policy Board is also connected to the defense industry.
Well, I think the problem is we don't know who they're really working for. The problem is, look, we want our generals and our policymakers with defense to have the benefit of decades of knowledge and prior public service and experience. And I don't think anyone can argue that that's a bad concept on its face. Of course, that makes sense. But if you're going to interact with folks who have contracts with the government and who stand to directly or indirectly make money from their association with the current government officials, then you better disclose what they're doing. You better have information about who serves. And the fact of the matter is, you can't find out anything about these people. We investigated them using public documents in various parts of Washington and commercially available databases like LexisNexis and those kinds of places to stitch together who these people are from hundreds, if not thousands, of sources around the world. But the actual disclosure forms that they have to file to the government are not public. Well, that means they're not available. That means there really is no disclosure. That means there's no transparency about this activity. And I have a problem with that. I think they have a basic standard of a requirement that we be assured that they're not self-dealing. And I don't care that they have ethics officials internally. None of those officials noticed any of the things I just mentioned. None of them thought there was any problem whatsoever. So the watchdogs over there at the Pentagon appear to be sleeping, as far as I can tell. So the only thing to protect the public is information about what they're up to. And right now, this administration is one of the most secretive administrations when it comes to public information of any we've seen in decades, actually. And, you know, with this Defense Policy Board, they should at least tell us more about these people. Now, some of the people serving on this, like Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State, who declined to serve on the September 11th commission because he didn't want to disclose who his clients were, is serving on the Defense Policy Board because he does not have to disclose those clients. And if there was a this requirement, they would all, some of them would quit, I have no doubt. But I also think there's lots of Americans, hundreds and hundreds of Americans who have enormous experience who are not looking for the next contract and would not have a problem with disclosure. I happen to think in a democracy, we have an obligation to protect the trust and to hold these folks accountable. And I just think that's essential. And right now, that's not a commonly held value across the river.
My guest is Charles Lewis, the founding executive director of the Center for Public Integrity. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Charles Lewis. He's the founder and executive director of the Center for Public Integrity. And this is a group that researches corruption and abuse of power by governments, corporations, and individuals involved in the political process. Let's look at some of the charges that there are conflicts of interest now in the contracts that are being handed out for the rebuilding of Iraq. Why don't we start with Halliburton? And this is the company that Vice President Cheney headed from 1995 to 2000. What does Halliburton do?
They're an oil services company. They're best known for going around the world, and they don't drill oil, but they help develop the oil fields, the actual equipment, and the manufacture of oil is sort of one of their key areas of business. Halliburton is also a very large multi-billion-dollar company, and they have subsidiaries. And Kellogg, Brown, and Root is one of their subsidiaries, and they do a lot of military logistics work where they do contracts on the ground, helping to serve the food, help to provide the latrines, help to do a lot of the things that government used to do, but now companies like KBR do. And so Halliburton is, you know, when Cheney was elected vice president, a lot of the discussion was we have two oil executives as president and vice president with Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney. But actually, Halliburton is also a major defense contractor, and because of KBR mostly, the subsidiary. And so that's what they do. I mean, there's other parts of the company as well, but that's probably what we're talking about now. And so Halliburton, you know, this is not well known, but in 1992, Halliburton and its subsidiary KBR got a contract worth several million dollars from Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney back in 1992 after the Gulf War to look at ways to do more privatization of some of these military logistics issues that occur at the Pentagon when they're in various danger zones around the world. Having companies come in and do what used to be done by Pentagon officials and Department of Defense officials and soldiers, basically. And so they did a study that said, yes, this is a great idea. You should start doing this more and more. It's much more efficient, et cetera. And after they get the contract in 92, Cheney becomes CEO of the parent company, Halliburton, 2 years later. This is a guy who had no business background whatsoever, had been a government official at high levels for many years from the 70s on, but had never run a company and was brought in to increase the public contract exposure and more than exposure, their basic revenues from government funds, government taxpayer money contracts. And over the next 8 or 9 years, KBR got something like 1,000 contracts. There were approximately 3,000 contracts given out over the next decade. both, that's mostly the Clinton administration, but also into the current Bush administration, giving these kinds of military logistics contracts out to KBR and other companies. And I think the second biggest recipient of these contracts, hundreds and hundreds of them, was KBR. So when we then find out that Halliburton and KBR are getting contracts in Iraq, it suddenly had a certain deja vu all over again feel to it, because this is a company that has benefited from its association with Cheney for many, many years.
And what's the contract that Kellogg Brown and Root has now in Iraq?
Well, I think KBR probably has many contracts, but the one that got a lot of press, I think, in recent weeks and months was the contract in Iraq from the Army Corps of Engineers. There was a $7 billion sole source contract, meaning no one else was asked to bid on it, to help clean up the oil fields and help out in general with the post-war Iraq. And KBR got this contract, again, with no other bidders, and no one knew about the contract for months and months until a congressman from California, Henry Waxman, made a big issue of it. The media and the public really didn't know much about it at all. In fact, they didn't know it existed.
Charles Lewis is the founding executive director of the Center for Public Integrity in Washington, D.C. We'll talk more about the Bush administration, the defense industry, and questions regarding conflict of interest in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Booksellers and the Discover Great New Writers Program, which features the literary voices of tomorrow today. Information available at Barnes & Noble stores and on the web at www.bn.com. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by Bantam Trade Paperbacks, a division of Random House, publisher of The Elegant Gathering of White Snows, a novel about eight women whose impromptu walking quest touches a nation, by Chris Radish. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we continue our conversation with Charles Lewis about ties between the Bush administration and the defense industry. Then we talk with Lieutenant Colonel Gene Pollock, a spokesperson for the Army Corps of Engineers, which awarded Kellogg Brown and Root the contract to repair the oil fields in Iraq.
Thank you.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Charles Lewis, the founding executive director of the watchdog group, the Center for Public Integrity. We're talking about ties between the Bush administration and the defense industry and whether they represent conflicts of interest. When we left off, we were talking about the contract given by the Army Corps of Engineers to Kellogg Brown & Root, KBR, a subsidiary of Halliburton, which was headed by Dick Cheney before he became vice president. The contract was awarded in secret before the start of the war in Iraq. Last March, the Army said that KBR had been given the contract to put out oil fires that might be set in Iraq during the war. More recently, the Army admitted that the role of KBR is broader, encompassing rebuilding oil fields and distributing oil.
Suddenly things looked a little different to lots of people. I mean, it was one thing to fix the oil fields. It's another thing to start pumping oil and being assisting in the oil production. And then suddenly a lot of people felt there was frustration because once again the public didn't really know what was going on. They weren't told initially. And then you've got the vice president's former company getting lucrative contracts secretly in many cases. The contract itself, the major one, the $7 billion most publicized contract, has never been released. We don't know what the contract looks like. It's classified. And so, there is an aura of secrecy around it, and to many people in Washington, the contract and the arrangement smells to high heaven, and they're angry about it, and they think it should be investigated, but it's not happening.
But Congressman Henry Waxman is leading an investigation into KBNR's contract in Iraq, isn't he?
Well, he is, but let's back up a second. I mean, Henry Waxman is one of the smartest and most experienced members of Congress today in Washington. But he happens to be a Democrat, and that means he does not have a committee. That means he cannot hold a hearing. It means he cannot issue a subpoena because the Republican majority will not issue a subpoena frequently, especially if it involves or could embarrass the president or the vice president. So Henry Waxman is doing an investigation without any of the traditional investigative tools that help to get at the truth. And so I think he's done a public service getting information to the public that we couldn't get otherwise, contracts and letters and correspondence that give you some insights that reporters and the public can't get. But he's also going to hit a wall here if he hasn't already, because it's sort of how Howard Cosell once said, a spitball against a battleship. He's a one lone member trying to fight and find information about something, and the powers that be are only going to occasionally tell him something, and it'll be very small, whatever it is they give out to him.
How do you prove conflict of interest? Here's what I'm thinking. You know, you could argue that, you know, Vice President Cheney, because of his work in government, is particularly well-suited to have headed Halliburton because he understands the industry, he understands defense, he understands other governments, he understands the way the world works. Likewise, his experience as the CEO of Halliburton could really be benefiting him now as vice president because he understands how the defense industry works and he understands how companies use the contracts that they get and what it takes for them to do the work they need to do, for instance, in rebuilding the oil industry of Iraq. So maybe this isn't a conflict at all. Maybe it's just a mutually beneficial thing, and we should all be very pleased about it. How do you prove that it's a negative? How do you prove that it's a conflict?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And obviously there are a number of people that think this is outrageous to sully the good name of the vice president or these companies that are doing God's work on behalf of all Americans. And so this is an important question. And you know, fairly or unfairly, it's a glass of water half full and half empty. Yes, we want people with experience. We want companies that know what they're doing, that are competent and have done things over the years on behalf of the United States. Yes, we want all those things. But we also want openness and transparency and rule of law. And if the company has committed fraud or paid fines for misleading the public, maybe they shouldn't get contracts. Well, none of that's enforced. We don't have accountability. People do commit fraud and abuse and they keep getting contracts. Halliburton is one of those companies. And so the conflict of interest, it does look weird that you've got a, you know, it's not every day that a sitting CEO becomes vice president, which is sort of what happened to Dick Cheney. And, you know, in some ways, is Halliburton being unfairly maligned because their former CEO happens to be the vice president? Are they getting a little brighter light shined on them than all the other contractors also getting contracts? Probably the answer is yes. There is a great deal of suspicion all over the world that we went into Iraq for commercial profiteering reasons, not just oil. You know, when people see these kinds of companies doing business without bidding, without any public information about their activities, it does make people scratch their heads. And you know what? That's okay. That's normal. That's it's called a democracy. And I think, no one is suggesting that Dick Cheney ordered that contract. Freedom of information does not apply to the White House, so you'll never find that out anyway. You'll never get his emails, and you'll never see his appointment calendars. You'll never see who he talked to. And I'm not suggesting that he did that. The problem here is he doesn't have to do anything. Everyone in the Pentagon knows that Halliburton is Dick Cheney's company. It's complicated. Your question's a complicated one, because how do you prove that? It's one of those things where it kind of looks like hell, but it probably is legal, and almost certainly is legal.
Do you think that the appearance of conflict of interest is important? In other words, is the appearance of a possible conflict of interest serious enough to try to avoid? Or do you think conflict of interest needs to be proven, that it needs to rise to some kind of higher threshold before it becomes a serious issue?
I actually am okay that there's two standards, a legal standard, which is a very, very tough, very, very high standard to prove, which is why you hardly ever see it prosecuted. And then the kind of domain of public discourse. If things look a little peculiar and it looks like there's a wink, wink, and someone got a contract, but you can't prove it, but it looks kind of strange, and suddenly they've gotten 10 contracts over a period of time, and that's an open society discussing current events and the public's money being spent. And that may be an apparent conflict of interest. It may have the appearance. And it may not be a legal violation of the conflict of interest laws, but the public has the right to know who's making money, who's getting their money, and who's doing the public's business. And sometimes the people that seem to get those contracts are extremely well-connected, and it does appear like these things are related. And I happen to think that's an important function in a democracy, to know all that. And if a company wants to avoid looking like they're insiders and getting inside deals and inside contracts, there's one very simple way to deal with it, and it is to disclose. Put out information about the bid process, put out the contracts, put out disclosure information when you're an advisor to a defense secretary about your holdings. And when you don't put that information out, it looks bad to the public. It looks like you're hiding something. Now, the famous line, sunlight is the best disinfectant. I happen to think that's right.
Of course, in the corporate world, there's always a lot of secrecy surrounding deals. People don't want to give away that information to their competitors.
Right, and we see where we got with all that secrecy in the 90s, as dozens and dozens of companies' CEOs have been doing perp walks, because they lied and the board of directors didn't even know what they were doing. And so I'm not sure how well served anyone was, including the shareholders, by the excessive secrecy.
Now, we've been focusing on the Bush administration, but have Democrats taken advantage of the revolving door in the same way? Are there a lot of people from the Clinton administration who are now in the defense industry?
Absolutely. We did a study a few weeks ago. It kind of got lost in the din of Iraq. We put out a report about the Clinton administration and where did the top 100 officials go after they left government. We found that 50 or 60 of the 100 are lobbyists today in Washington, one way or another, connected to either law firms or corporate clients doing business with the government one way or another, trying to get favors from government one way or another. So in other words, it's a form of the revolving door. They're going in and they're plying their wares as former high-level government officials, and now have probably tripled, quintupled their income by advising these companies on how to operate with the government. And so Democrats do this as well as Republicans. I mean, this is a bipartisan phenomenon that's been going on for many, many years, for decades. And, you know, when you have defense secretaries like Harold Brown, who worked with Jimmy Carter, working with companies getting defense contracts. Now, in fairness to him, he'd say, I'm just on the board of these companies. It's not the same thing. But you have, you know, there are a lot of cases of Democrats now making money. And you know, I mentioned a few earlier.
Charles Lewis, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Charles Lewis is the founding executive director of the watchdog group, the Center for Public Integrity, in Washington, D.C. Coming up, Lieutenant Colonel Gene Pollock, a spokesperson for the Army Corps of Engineers, which awarded the contract to Kellogg Brown and Root to repair the oil fields of Iraq. This is Fresh Air. After our interview with Charles Lewis about ties between the Bush administration and the defense industry and the questions those ties raise about conflicts of interest, we wanted to hear the point of view from within the Pentagon. Our interview requests were declined by the Pentagon's Public Affairs Department and its Standards of Conduct Office, the Inspector General of the Department of Defense, and Richard Perle, who recently resigned from his position as chair of the Defense Policy Board but remains on the board. We were able to speak with Lieutenant Colonel Gene Pollock, a spokesperson for the Army Corps of Engineers, which awarded the contract to Kellogg Brown and Root to restore the oil fields of Iraq. Kellogg Brown and Root, KBR, is a subsidiary of Halliburton, the company which was formerly headed by Vice President Dick Cheney. Back in March, it was reported that Kellogg Brown and Root had gotten the contract to put out the oil well fires in Iraq. You know, it's assuming that there would be a war and that there would be oil fires. The contract was controversial right from the start. The first issue was that it was a no-bid contract. The contract was given out without letting any other companies bid, and no one knew that this had happened until after the contract was made. Why was it done like that without competition?
Well, the Kellogg Brown and Root had been previously engaged by the U.S. Central Command to do a study on what it would take to put out oil well fires in Iraq. Now, their preparation for doing this was based on the request by U.S. Central Command, and that was done under the authority of the Logistics Augmentation Program, the LOGCAP program, which they had competitively been awarded a couple of years ago. You have to understand that, you know, Kellogg Brown and Root then, as having been involved with the plan when it came time to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers being prepared to deal with the mission of putting out oil well fires and addressing environmental hazards as a result of damage to the oil infrastructure, our goal was to engage the company best positioned to deal with that issue. And certainly matters of security and the planning of going into war would limit the ability to go out and do general contracting type things. You know, it's kind of hard to go out and do a wide bid advertising and ask companies to be prepared to fight oil well fires, you know, on a certain date in anticipation of war. And this was an element of that war planning. So as with all the war planning, it's basically conducted in secret and it's all classified. So it's not one of those things you go out and generally advertise.
Another question that was raised was that Kellogg Brown and Root is a subsidiary of Halliburton, which is the company that Vice President Cheney ran before he was vice president. Some people felt that Kellogg Brown and Root had an unfair advantage for acquiring federal contracts because of that political connection, because of that business connection to Vice President Cheney. What's your response to that?
Kellogg Brown and Root was awarded the LOGCAP contract a couple of years ago in a competitive bid process. Their having won that contract meant that they were positioned to be able to do this. So as far as a conflict of interest or you know, their ties to their parent corporation, Halliburton, that really had nothing to do with our engaging their services. The only thing that we were concerned with was who was going to be best positioned to help us immediately deal with the threat that would be posed to the environment and to the surrounding forces in Iraq if those oil wells were put on fire.
More recently, it's been reported that Kellogg Brown & Root is doing more than just putting out oil well fires, which was what the contract was originally supposed to be for, a lot of people thought. The contract also includes doing repair work in the oil fields and actually getting oil pumping again, and I believe distributing the oil as well. Is that right?
The distribution that Kellogg Brown & Root is involved with for us over there is primarily in arranging the distribution of products that are required for the Iraqi populace to maintain or continue their lifestyle, being able to get fuel for their automobiles and being able to get gas for cooking in their homes, which is their primary method of cooking. So under the emergency services piece of the contract that we issued Kellogg Brown & Root, we use that to help continue to make sure that the Iraqi populace had access to the critical fuels that they would need so that they continue and go about their lives and continue with the recovery of the country.
Now, there's a report from the Associated Press last Friday that said that the costs have doubled for KBR's work in the past month, you know, in Iraq, and it said that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers backed off on estimates that a fully competitive replacement contract would be awarded by August. What happened there?
Well, as far as the doubling of cost, the AP story that makes it sound like this is a new breaking story kind of has it wrong in that it's not giving the full story. We said many weeks back that we expected that in the end result of the Kellogg Brown & Root contract, that we would probably be somewhere around $600 million for the contract. So we had never said that, you know, we thought $70 million would be where we would wind up. Our expectation has been that it would be more on the order of $600 million total for that contract. So the fact that they reported that we were up to $180 million was really nothing out of the ordinary for what our expectations are on that contract.
And did you expect to open the process up to competition sooner than you're actually going to be able to?
Well, that's always one of those. It's a process that's hard to totally define at the outset because we have to coordinate from the Corps of Engineers with the Department of the Army and also the Department of Defense to lay out what the strategy is going to be for future contracting. And then you have to make sure that within the bounds of all that contracting that you're meeting all the regulatory requirements for the, you know, federal acquisition laws. You're looking at things like international competition. You're trying to determine the exact scope of the work. Part of those early estimates, we had not had the opportunity to go in and do a full assessment of the Iraqi oil infrastructure. There's a lot of factors that even still are influencing the process. There was not as much damage to the infrastructure as what was anticipated as being possible at the onset of the war. At the same time, you know, we're still dealing with the country has a problem with looting that's being dealt with. We have a number of issues. I mean, we had to wait for security to be in place where it was safe for the contractors and other folks to go in and actually do assessments on the infrastructure. And then another factor that influences this whole process is how quickly are the Iraqi oil companies going to be able to come back to work and be ready to assume the mission? Because the intent of this has always been to hand the mission and hand the oil infrastructure and the oil operations back over to the Iraqi people as soon as they were in a position to assume the oil mission again.
My guest is Lieutenant Colonel Gene Pollack, a spokesperson for the Army Corps of Engineers. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Thank you. Let's get back to our interview with Lieutenant Colonel Gene Pollack, a spokesperson for the Army Corps of Engineers, which awarded the contract to restore the oil fields in Iraq to the Halliburton subsidiary Kellogg Brown & Root. Over the past few years, Kellogg Brown & Root has done a lot of work for the federal government. There have been charges against the company of fraudulent accounting practices, of KBR overcharging the government for work they had done. The Securities and Exchange Commission has been looking into these charges. Is this something that the Army Corps of Engineers takes into account when giving a company a major contract?
Well, our criteria, or one of the criteria for looking at a company that's going to be doing work, is to go in and make sure that they are on a list of federally approved companies for us to deal with. And when we awarded the contract to Kellogg Brown & Root, there was no prohibition against our dealing with them for that work. So it met our requirement for engaging their services.
Were you satisfied with their fiscal responsibility record? For example, there are other questions that have been raised about KBR's work. They have a major contract to run U.S. military bases overseas, and the General Accounting Office did an investigation of their work, found many questionable costs and overcharges. So, was that taken into account when giving them?
Well, what we're doing is one of our main responsibilities in this contract is to provide contract oversight. So all of the bills and all of the claims for reimbursement and the claims of cost of Kellogg Brown & Root associated with this contract, we have contract oversight specialists who are responsible for ensuring that all the proper documentation is in place, that costs are justified, and that the costs are in accordance with what would be considered normal industry standards. So that's a role for the Corps of Engineers to ensure that, in fact, the contract and the contract costs are administered fairly.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that when Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense under the first President Bush, he commissioned a study from Kellogg Brown & Root about what it would take to privatize certain functions of the military, certain infrastructure kind of functions. Brown & Root was given a lot of money to do this study. They did the study and, of course, recommended that certain of these functions be privatized. And then Dick Cheney, left government, became the CEO of Halliburton, which is the parent company of Kellogg Brown & Root. And at that point, Kellogg Brown & Root starts getting a lot of these contracts for privatizing some of the military's work. And then Dick Cheney goes back to government, becomes vice president, and now Kellogg Brown & Root has this big lucrative contract in Iraq. So you could argue that it's Dick Cheney who kind of helped put Kellogg Brown & Root in the position where it could get these lucrative contracts, put them in the position both through his work as vice president and as CEO of Halliburton.
I don't know enough about all the details of the history behind what you were just describing, nor would it probably be in my lane to comment on a lot of that. What I will say is that the LogCAP contract, when it was first initiated in the early 90s, was competitively awarded to Kellogg Brown & Root, or Brown & Root Services at the time. From there, the second LogCAP contract was competitively awarded to Dynacorp, and then won again in the third contract by Kellogg Brown & Root. Now, this entire operation that the Corps of Engineers has undergone with the combating of the oil well fires, had Dynacorp been in position and still been the holders of the LogCAP contract, they would have been the organization that did the study, and they would have been the organization that we would have awarded the contract to engage in the oil well firefighting.
There's a lot of questions that are of conflict of interest that have been raised about the Bush administration and the defense industry. And, one of those questions surrounds Vice President Dick Cheney, because he's the former CEO of Halliburton, which is the company that has Kellogg Brown & Root as a subsidiary. Sometimes in the conflict of interest world, the appearance of a conflict of interest is bad enough to make you think twice about going through with something. Did the Army Corps of Engineers ever think, well, this is going to look bad, even if there isn't really a conflict, even if we don't really believe that there's a conflict between the fact that Dick Cheney is the vice president and he used to be the CEO of Halliburton, even though we don't really believe there's a conflict, there might be the appearance of a conflict, and that's going to look bad, so we should really think twice about this.
Well, the bottom line to all of this is we went into this fully realizing that there was a perception out there, a possible perception associated with Kellogg Brown and Root being related to Halliburton and their linkage to the vice president when he was formerly with the company. But the bottom line to all of this is mission execution and not perception is our criteria for success. So our engagement of Kellogg Brown and Root meant that we were in fact able to get in there quickly and deal with the oil well fires, very successfully, and get those put out. So again, the mission execution is what we were really interested in, and we went into this fully understanding that some people would raise an eyebrow about engaging their services, but they were the company best positioned to make sure that we were successful.
Any final thoughts that you'd like to add, Colonel?
I would say that the Corps of Engineers has done things the right way. We engaged a company that was positioned to provide us with a quick response to being able to deal with the environmental threat and the hazards associated with oil well fires and damage to the desert. We continue to work towards competitively bid contracts for future work in Iraq. And we're actually very proud that almost our entire response over there has been through volunteers from the Corps of Engineers who have responded to this mission from all over the country to go help the people of Iraq get back on their feet.
Colonel Pollack, thank you very much for talking with us.
And appreciate the opportunity to tell the Corps side of this.
Lieutenant Colonel Gene Pollack is a spokesperson for the Army Corps of Engineers, which awarded the contract to the Halliburton subsidiary Kellogg Brown & Root to restore the oil fields of Iraq. Earlier, we heard from Charles Lewis of the Center for Public Integrity. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews today were produced by Amy Sallet. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Tapes and transcripts of Fresh Air are available at 1-877-213-7374 or on the internet at www.burrells.com. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, the discovery of three ancient skulls in Ethiopia that are over 150,000 years old and what they tell us about human evolution. We talk with paleoanthropologist Tim White. He led the team that uncovered the fossils. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.